This is CliffCentral.com.
No more bullshit. The Gareth Cliff Show on CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, we're here, we're live. It's Tuesday morning, it's the 9th of January. What does that mean, Mubs?
700 and 850 million thousand more days of the month left.
That's by presidential calculation, that's exactly 1,347.15% correct.
And 70.
And 70.
Spelele.
I wonder what he's up to, that douchebag. Don't you?
Oh, I saw him with Cyril last night.
Oh, yeah? Oh. They're still hobnobbing, those two?
Were they bar hopping? What's their
they
story?
They were in one of the bar...
Don't you want to ask...
Bar hopping, just like, arm in arm, just going out for a drink
yourself,
with the guys.
Who is that good for and who is it bad for? Like, you know?
They were in one of the houses, the presidential houses in Durban.
Cyril's checking it out, is he?
It was Cyril.
Yeah, he's
and
like, the prince. I think I'll keep that. I'll throw that out. That'll stay. That'll go.
Mabali, we were actually close because they were. I even saved this picture because I thought this was hilarious. They
really?
Were even dancing.
Oh, really?
Wow,
oh, yeah.
I mean,
the two of them were dancing.
That's right up the president's
alley. That's so nice.
Yeah.
Well, we don't really have any massive worries in the world. I would also dance more. Mm-mm.
Of course, yes.
Mm-mm.
But I wonder if...
What were they dancing to? That's us, Ben, by the way, in case you're wondering. All right,
Oh, my goodness.
I couldn't sleep properly last night. It was partly because it was still really hot by the time I got into bed. And I don't know. It's like this combination. First of all, my dog... There's a conspiracy against me by the weather and my dog at the moment.
Oh.
Are we not using a dramatic word?
Yeah, okay. All right. It's all in my head. But the snoring of this dog is a problem. Now, I love... this dog to pieces.
I notice how it's this dog when there's a problem. It's Carl when he's being cute.
Right. Yeah. I love Carl to pieces.
Okay.
The only thing about him, he's not aggressive. He doesn't shit in the house. He doesn't tear up my furniture. He doesn't fight with other dogs. He doesn't try and escape the whole time. He's a very good dog. He snores, but like a human. I played you the sound before, remember?
Yeah, it's rough.
Jesus, it's loud.
Like a human man who came home drunk.
Yeah. And I don't know what to do. I don't know if you can. I mean, I've been putting up with it for what, 5 or 6 years? I cannot get to sleep with him going. It sounds like one of those dragons of the Khaleesi.
And like, do you throw a pillow at him or just say things?
See, I think he knows that he's pissing me off because he slept in the passage. But he still makes a racket because it's also, he lies there because the tiles are there and it's colder.
Yeah.
So when it's hot, so last night I actually closed the bedroom door. I felt bad about this because then it means, you know, he thinks I'm keeping him out. But I still couldn't get to sleep. I got to sleep at 3 a.m.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It was partly him. It was partly the weather. It was, I think my brain's just on fire suddenly. And I'm adjusting back to work hours where during the holidays I stayed up late and my default setting isn't to wake up early. We've discussed this 1,000 times, and I know it's boring to a lot of people, but you get morning people, and you get people who stay up late. If I didn't do this show, I'd be one of those people who stayed up late and woke up late.
I'm starting to think it's more like you don't actually get morning people, and don't try to fool me by saying you're a morning person. You're just an ambitious person. That's what it really is. Because nobody wants to get up early.
No, I think you're right.
I don't know anybody who says, I can't wait to be on holiday so I can really focus on getting up early.
Except kids.
Yeah, but they don't count.
Oh.
Well, they don't.
Because they're on TV.
Old people wake up early. Old people love waking up early.
Yeah, it's because they've got to go pee every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because they want to wake up. It's because their bladders have just given up on them.
Yeah.
No, my gran literally these days, she just wakes up and she sits outside on her balcony.
At like 5, right?
Yeah, because she's waiting for the next time she has to pee.
And she now knows what time the buses drive by and which car leaves which property at what time. And I'm like, this can't be your life. So that's not what we're aspiring for.
This is very productive stuff. I'm very proud of myself. I did 3 loads of washing yesterday.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
is that
yeah.
great? And there's washing all over my house, drying at the moment.
Yeah.
T-shirts and underwear. And if you walked into my house right now, you'd think I'd stolen a bunch of clothes.
Or you'd think that you're running a laundromat out of your home.
I am running a laundromat.
Looking around saying, where are all the employees?
I am. And I wrote 5 or 6 handwritten letters that I need to, you know, to thank people for certain things. I love doing that. It's one of my favorite things. Sit there at my desk and I write a letter in pen. And, you know, it's usually to people who I want to thank for something or, you know, something that's meaningful that's happened. I love doing that. And that now they're all sitting in my bag and waiting to be posted. And here's the scary part. If you don't send them via like a post net, those people will never get them.
Mm-hmm. Sadly so.
So you have to, you know, have to go and find a post net and send it by them because our own post office, I mean, God bless them. There's this really nice dude across the road from us here at the Rivonia post office. And he phones me and says, hey, there's a package for you. I mean, you know, there are people like that who take things to a level of customer service, but they're unfortunately few and far between. I believe he's retiring at the end of this year. Because he was the guy who I didn't have a problem. Yeah, I knew it would always arrive 3 months late or whatever. But I'd order stuff from overseas, and because of him, I knew by the time it got to that post office, he had done everything he could to speed up the process. I mean, what a good guy.
Mm.
But with letters, I wouldn't trust the post office here, especially sending them out. You might never get there. Santa Claus might get letters from you when you were 12, and now you're 40.
It'd be kind of cool if you just gave you a whole bunch of stuff then.
Yeah, suddenly you get to 40 and you get like a toy gun. And
actually, the post office should just use Santa Claus for deliveries.
He
would do a better job.
And I think he's got time the rest of the year.
The rest of the year he's unemployed.
Yeah, he could even rent them the reindeer.
No, sure.
They could let like Jabulani or
he doesn't just
Sizwe, whoever the guy is, you know, at every branch, he could each get a turn to ride.
He doesn't
the
just crack the whip on Christmas Eve. It's a year's work in progress there.
No, don't
he's got to work on trade union deficits and
don't the elves do that
stuff?
Yeah,
he can summon the elves
who's
to do that stuff. Which is exactly why he can then tell them what to do.
He's got to balance the books. He's got to source cheaper things from China.
Sometimes Santa has to realize he's old and needs to hire a manager.
Oh.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Managers steal, Gareth. Managers steal. And then what? Crying kids on Christmas. Then whose fault is it? Santa.
Exactly. Yeah, you make a good point. I suppose ultimate responsibility has to reside with Santa.
So I'm not trying to spoil the mood here or anything.
I don't even know where we're going with this conversation. I mean, we started off talking about the president and Cyril and
the heat and not sleeping and this. But my family and I actually decided to cut this whole Santa thing with my niece and my nephew just last year, Christmas.
I always want to know because I've got a niece and she, I think, still believes in Father Christmas.
Yeah, we were like, no.
How old is she?
10, 11?
That's okay. That's okay. No, come 11. On. I reckon 12 has to be the cutoff.
Oh, my niece and nephew are 6 turning 7.
You already
spoiled. We were like, no, that's it. Because it was actually one of my sisters, one of their mothers, who initiated this. She was like, listen, I work way too damn hard to pay for all of these gifts.
Then and get going you 2 every time.
And
right?
then we're going to give some credit to some random man.
Yeah. Some random fat white
she
guy.
She was like, nah, this baby better know that I was the one who bought all of this. Is that mean? I don't think it is. We're just giving them a taste of reality of how the world works.
Like maybe do this other way. So if Santa doesn't give you the big gift, Santa gives you a small little something. So then it's like, oh, it's cute. You know?
I can do without that.
And then like if it turns out that you believe in Santa, it's like, well, I'm not losing much. I mean, he gave me like this little thingy.
Well, the kids weren't really phased. We still have Santa decorations. Santa's just known as
it's just
the
that they're
going to
ask like who is Santa? What is Santa? You go, well, Santa's that guy who gives you that little something.
I don't think it's mean at all. First of all, you were lying to the kids to begin with, and now now you've got to come forward with the truth.
Actually,
well,
true.
Honey, we've been lying to you this whole time.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there are plenty of kids who are raised not believing in the whole Father Christmas thing, but they still celebrate Christmas.
Yeah, there's kids in ISIS. They don't know what Santa is.
Did we have to go that extreme?
No,
just
I mean,
throwing it out there.
kids outside of Christianity, perfectly fine, stable human beings who still celebrate Christmas nonetheless.
Oh, well. Just, yeah, random thoughts.
Anybody got like a list of things that they want to do for New Year for 2018? I mean, it's still the second week of the year, so there must be some people who've kicked in with a, you know, I put that list together of the things that I think we should stop doing based on what Rich Mulholland said the 1 week. And that's getting a lot of traction. The blog is up on cliffcentral.com if you want to see it. You got a list?
Yeah, because this is the dangerous week. We were all so euphoric last week and also motivated and charmed with who we are.
I saw the gym starting to get full today, though. I mean, yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yesterday. It's because on Sunday it was quiet. You know, people like, oh, it's a Sunday. I don't think I'll do it. Then yesterday, suddenly, chock full. So I think there's still a lot of people who are motivated, but like Ben says, it starts to fall off in this week.
Well, it falls off the moment that your life gets in the way. Like, when you have time, life's so simple. You're so smart. Everything's so orderly.
Easy.
And then it's like, traffic.
Fuck.
And then there's like your job. And then there's whoever you feed in your life. I don't know. People always feed other people. And then it's hard. And then you like get behind the eight ball. And then it's like, oh, shit. Yeah. So January, I'm actually poor.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
And it's tough to remain motivated.
Exactly. So every day you got to write stuff down. That's what Rich. That's why you got to go back to Rich's tips, basically.
Well, that's a fun way to go because then you can buy yourself a little journal, stroke notebook.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You get some nice notebooks. You carry that around with you. You look terribly smart. I always write notes in every meeting I have. I've got, I don't know, about 6 or 7 notebooks that are just chock full since we started this, 2014. So that's in 4 years. I've filled 6 or 7 notebooks. And I love them. You know, they get those little, what do you call them? A5 size?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You should pop them in your bag.
That's the fancy size.
And you know what it also does? It also, why is it fancy?
Yeah.
It just is.
What do you want to go?
A5.
Do you want to go smaller than that?
No, A5 is great because A4 is like what you had as a kid. But when you're A5, you're an adult. Yeah.
What? Okay.
But this is the Ben world.
Yeah. Let's go with it.
It also, you know why I like it too? Is it gives you a chance to practice writing. Because how often...
I still love writing.
Who writes these days? You can email, you know, you can type everything. People type. And I don't know if maybe there's some research into this, but people can't write anymore. They can't spell, first of all, because if you're writing on a computer, you rely on spell check and stuff. And then if you write the words, you have to think about it. It engages different parts of your brain. I think it probably is very good for you in terms of keeping your mental stimulation in certain areas up. You know, they say that they've done a lot of research into Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and these things. And you can actually actively combat those by playing games, by writing, by doing addition without a calculator. Those are little things that you could add to your list of things that you want to do in 2018 that might just keep you mentally healthy.
There's also something that's loosely called lazy eye, where because children looking at screens and screens have become smaller over time, their eyes are actually not used to stretching from one side of the page to the next because they're so conditioned to watching these small little screens on tablets or smartphones.
That's a real thing?
That's a real thing that I read about. I read about it.
But you know, like, we was always right because writing is one of the things we did a lot of in our formative years. Well, I know we did because we weren't bored like 3 days ago, like Sia.
Yes.
So if we lose that ability, we're going to lose a whole bunch about us. We just stand there in this hole, even your thumb. I'm sure we have bigger thumb arches, thingies, mechanisms because of texting and stuff.
Fingers are weird.
Oh.
Smaller or larger sort of ability to stretch? Because I know people who play the piano have to do exercises to get their fingers to stretch further.
I just think the ability to stretch, that's also gone because it works in a very small axis of movement.
I think it's probably shrunk, not expanded. If you speak to, if you play the piano, call us because then you'll know about this. I used to be able to play the piano once. Apple have been urged, I don't know if you heard this story in the news, but Apple have been urged to tackle children's addiction to iPhones.
Yeah.
Did you see this story?
I saw the headline, but
it's all over the news this week.
I haven't gone into the story. What did they say?
Just imagine that, like in smoking ads, you're the new iPhone, blah blah blah,
because
hazardous to children.
How? Let me ask you this: on a daily basis, how many times are kids exposed to drugs, alcohol, KFC, car accidents? Much less than they would be addicted to phones, right?
Yeah.
So the phone is the number one addiction now, if you're going to think about vices.
And how many times do parents just hand over their phones to the kids because they're thinking, oh, just shut up already. Yeah. Like, I need you to be distracted. Take this.
Play Angry Birds. So two of Apple's major investors have urged the iPhone maker to take urgent action to curb children's growing addiction to the smartphones amid fears frequent use may be damaging the next generation. Listen to this.
These generations are getting worse and worse.
At present, parents can block or limit specific apps and features on an iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch. In an open letter to Apple on Monday, the investors suggested the company goes a step further and allow users' ages to be inputted into phones, screen time to be limited, as well as a restriction on use to certain hours. Because then the parents can actually program it to do that for them, right? Now, there are apps. I know people have developed a couple of apps that, you know, limit the amount of time. My nephew, they were around during the holidays quite a lot, and I walked in, and he was busy playing Angry Birds. And he kind of immediately felt guilty because he knows he's got a time limit.
Okay.
So he said to me, no, I've got the timer on. I mean, he's four. He's turning four this month.
Mm.
I've got the timer on. When the timer runs out, I'll stop. And I said to him, I wasn't going to come and like shit on you. But he was already defensive. He was like, I promise I'm only going to do it for the time I'm allowed. And he showed me the timer and everything. So he's obviously been told by his parents he's not allowed to play for too long. This is interesting. They called on the firm to establish a committee of experts to study the impact of technology on children and to assign a top-level Apple executive to take responsibility for the issue. How's that, huh?
Mm.
As one of the most innovative companies in the history of technology, Apple can play a defining role in signaling to the industry that paying special attention to the health and development of the next generation is both good business and the right thing to do. The letter also cited research showing that the average American teenager spends 4.5 hours a day on their smartphone, excluding texting and talking.
Is that all?
Excluding.
That
4.5 hours a day. All right, think about it. School takes up, what, from 8 in the morning until, what, like 1 in the afternoon?
Two
in the afternoon.
Yeah. 19,
11, so it's half the day.
Six hours.
Then you're meant to sleep from, let's say, 9, 10, if you've got really open-minded liberal parents, until, what, 6 the next morning or 5 the next morning. So that only gives you about 5 or 6 hours to play with. And of that 5 or 6 hours, 4.5 is being spent on everything excluding texting and phones, actually using it as a phone. So I reckon that that's total addiction, if you ask me.
But you can see kids in public, like, they're always.
And by the way,
I don't think
I'm better than that, just by the way. I think I'm probably right there as well. You saying?
But it's like a safety blanket / cigarette / whatever it is. It's like a grab hold to thing. You know, like in Peanuts, Linus always had his blanket.
It's a Nunu blanket. It's your security.
It's that whole thing with the phone now.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the reason a story like this is debatable is because they're still worried about kids. But now that we do think about it, we're probably guilty of the exact same thing.
That's the
Except
point.
We'll make excuses of like, oh, well, no, I do it for work.
It's work.
I have to check emails. Exactly. I'm driving from one meeting to the next. It's work.
It's still the same. When I'm around boring people, I say, oh, I've got to have my phone with me.
Exactly.
Who's from, you know, Sia's going to send me an urgent emergency message.
Absolutely.
I know yesterday I predicted a shitstorm about this kid with the hoodie and the smartest monkey in the jungle.
People were spending 4 hours on their phones yesterday trying to find all these pictures so they could circulate them.
So here's the thing. They can't be racist if they didn't think this would be a problem. They just cast a kid, cute little kid, put the hoodie on him. Nobody thought, monkey, because that would be a racist thing to think. And therefore, they just made the ad. And all along the process, Nobody thought, well, let's be extra careful because, you know, we don't want to let black people think they're monkeys because why would I think that? So they're not racist. You can't be cross with them. Now they're being forced to apologize and retract and change and blah, blah, blah because people want to read that they were racist. In other words, that they thought, mustn't let those black people think they're monkeys, and then did it anyway.
You know, it's very
it's
much
weird, right?
It's not weird. It's very much a personal experience thing. I saw a thread by a lady in America yesterday, and she was going on and on and on about how when she was growing up, she had been called a monkey by all sorts of people her whole life. And I was just thinking to myself, you know, from her perspective, that's what she is seeing it as. From your perspective, you're not seeing it that way at all. And really, at the end of the day, that's what these things are about. They're just about which side of the coin you happen to be on, or which side of the fence you're either screaming from or trying to say, hey, people, can we just have a conversation about this?
Totally understand that. And it makes a lot of sense. But we can't read racism into things that clearly nobody was trying to upset anyone, and no one was trying to make someone feel. You can't make someone feel a certain way.
So I think that responsibility lies with H&M, and it annoys me when...
So you reckon that they should have known better than to
do it? As in, that if that's their stance, if they did nothing wrong, then why do you have to apologize? That's why I hate when people are caught in situations, they apologize and they remove this. Well, stand by it. If you didn't do anything wrong, then just put out a statement saying,
hey, listen, if anyone's upset, we really are sorry that you're upset, but we meant no ill.
Yeah. So now, like, why?
Because someone in a top decision, somebody in a top position picks up the phone and they say, see, I just issued the retraction.
Exactly, which means you don't think it
through. Or someone doesn't want to get fired and they're like, oh, let's just apologize.
Because at the same time, like, we all know the sensitivities that happen in this world of ours, especially on social media, blah, 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 blah. H&M has an agency who does this kind of stuff. H&M is a global brand. There is no ignorance in this position. With 2018, there is no such thing as ignorance in this kind of stuff. This is clearly a PR stunt, and someone, some dark agency, some Bell Pottinger of the fashion retail world out there is going, well, if we have a racial incident now, our stock will be up in July. We'll take a dip now, but it'll go up.
So? Do you think it's that cynical?
I reckon there's algorithms runs because nobody can be that stupid. There was a whole range of jerseys and kids, right?
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. The black kid was in the monkey jersey. Yeah. Yeah. That, come on, that's not a coincidence.
Then
that's
there was a
bullshit.
White kid in the tiger jersey, you know, and another kid in an elephant one. Yeah.
But it was the black kid in the cutest little monkey jersey. There's got to be a plan behind this. Nobody is that stupid in this world anymore.
I mean, if that is true, that is just new levels of being duped.
Well, also, it's like manipulation of people's emotions, right?
Yes, yes.
On a whole new level, maybe this is the future of advertising. We keep saying that, you know, everybody says, all the smart people are saying that advertising is turning into content. But there can also be malicious content. Like there can be negative advertising. There can be positive advertising. You know how you used to have competitive advertising. And then you'd have advertising which actually goes against certain products. You know, like, for example, negative advertising is like saying smoking will give you cancer and showing the rotten lungs on the cover of the cigarette box. And that's meant to have the reaction of putting you off of a certain product. And maybe Ben's got a point. I mean, he's been in advertising. Maybe you've sowed the seeds for all of this, Ben. Well, you're the mastermind.
I know this might sound like a Black Mirror episode, but there's a lot to be said about people being treated like shit and going back to people who treated them like shit. You see it in relationships. We see it in politics. We see it in
it's a kind of negative reinforcement. It's a tension.
In relationships, we see it all the time.
So even though people are going, ah, oh, H&M, I'm not going to buy your stuff, they're going to always see H&M like this. Oh, I wish they actually liked us. I hate the disrespected black people. And then eventually they'll just go back and they'll be like, well, okay, I forgive you. Just like any other abusive relationship. And I reckon there's agencies that go in covertly and they say, look, you need a racial storm.
You know what? Now that you're breaking it down, it doesn't seem that far-fetched, because if you think about when you're advertising or marketing, you go, okay, so I need to tap into these group of individuals, women. What do they like? And then you've literally got to go into their brains, pull certain cogs and levers to influence them to try and buy your products. That is a type of manipulation. Mm-hmm. So why not take it to the extreme?
If that's the case, then this world is twisted. I'm sorry. Like, this is
sick.
Some nasty. Yeah,
it's been twisted for a fair amount of time.
Yeah, it has.
Well,
to be true.
Here's some information about that. Apparently, the little kid's parents consented to the image and they said they saw nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, they probably didn't. Yeah. I mean, right. You're somebody asks you, please, can we use your child as a model in our ad campaign? Oh, sure. How fabulous. Oh, they look so cute. Oh, the pictures are great. Oh,
and this
fantastic.
Will help pay for the education, right?
The pictures are great. My son looks so cute. Right. He's about to become a little star. Of course, they didn't see anything
and
wrong with
that.
It.
And look at that. Within a day, the next layer of the story comes out.
There you go.
New role players.
See, don't say that listening to us this morning wasn't an interesting and mind-opening experience. Thank you, Ben.
Ben literally just dropped bombs this morning.
See, like The Weeknd has a collection at H&M, The Weeknd, the music artist, and then he's now tweeted to say like, oh, H&M, how dare you? I don't want to be about
we know what
anymore.
That is. That's
so you guys really think like it's all, oh.
We know
no,
that.
No, he's being not twisted part so of the much. Plan.
No, I don't know. That's him virtue signaling. It's like I saw... It's please.
H&M know this.
And yesterday I did watch a little bit of the Golden Globe stuff just so I could have an informed,
I saw your tweets.
An informed point of view. I was just horrified because even Oprah, and you know I've got this grudging respect for Oprah because she's a genius and she's changed the world of television forever and she understands how to connect to audiences like so few people in the universe. So when I... A lot. 90% of the stuff that I say about Oprah is just because I'm desperately jealous about how well she's done and how brilliant she is. You know that, right? But man, there are a series of pictures. I don't know, like 10 years in a row of pictures of her and Harvey being the best of friends and her and Harvey sitting and she's kind of introducing Harvey to young girls. And you think, wow, Oprah, you really didn't know? Of course she knew. And there's such hypocrisy. You see all these other people sitting in the audience. Like, Oprah's busy comparing a horrible story that happened just a few days ago about a young black girl who was raped by a group of white guys.
Oh, I saw the article you retweeted as well.
And they said,
Reese Taylor.
They said, Oprah's standing up in front of an audience of people who don't have any way of connecting to that. And she's saying to them, we're all that girl. And no, you're not. These are spoiled Hollywood elites. They don't know how that girl's life went. How she felt, what she must have gone through, the trauma of that situation. No, you can't just say it and expect it to be true. It isn't.
Well, yeah, because I'm also an equal lover and a hater, the story of Reese Taylor was back in the civil rights movement, and she referenced Rosa Parks, and also the article you read spoke about how can you compare a life of a woman, even be it a black woman today,
yes,
to someone who lived way
back
when.
And even someone like Sidney Poitier in the 1960s, because the things he had to deal with were very different to the things that Oprah has to deal with now. And I'm not going to say that her personal experiences haven't been, you know, foundational to her success and to her strength. I always think that if you have adversity in your life, you end up stronger. Mm-hmm. And if anything, she proves that to us. Which means, ironically, that you have to go through some difficulty to end up being great. And that's what people don't like to acknowledge. They like to say, it's going to be fine, someone will look after you, the world is on your side, blah, 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 which is not true. I prefer a little realism. But the point of the article that I read is that Oprah is really good at preaching the stuff people want to hear.
That's her business.
And she's the best at that. But that doesn't mean it's true. And she herself twists this your truth, the truth situation.
Yo, everyone was on there.
Which bothers me. It really does. Because what you're doing is you're effectively, you're like those snake oil salesmen, you know, those people who used to, and even the doom in the face guy here in South Africa, you promise people that you'll solve their problems. It's like those Sangoma posters you see. Bigger penis, happy sex life, money in the bank. You can't do that to gullible people, because what you're doing is you're setting up this, it's like the EFF lying to kids about going to varsity and everyone's going to get in and get free education. We know that that's not going to happen. So what you're doing is setting these people up to have huge unnecessary pain in their futures. There's necessary pain that you bring about yourself, and then there's unnecessary pain where you're lied to and you're used as a tool by people who don't actually give a damn about you. And that bothers me. And in this case, I'm certainly not accusing Oprah of being manipulative in that respect. But the things that she talks about are things within a bubble that have very little impact on the lives of ordinary people, particularly in America, but also here in South Africa. And then you hear everybody saying, well, and this might get us onto the five things that you need to know today. Well, maybe she should run in 2020. Everybody's talking about that.
Well, a lot of analysts, and you know how analysts love to think that they've got things all figured out and they just know things that the rest of us have no cooking clue on.
Right.
So a lot of analysts have now come forward after Oprah's speech and they said, well, she gave a lot of thought into what she was saying. Some people were even saying that if you dissect parts of that speech, parts of them could be used as a tagline for a presidential race.
Yep.
So, you know, and then apparently two sources have also come forward and spoken to CNN and say that they have it on good authority that Oprah is actively thinking about running for president in the nearest future. So some people are saying that, well, you know, maybe the Golden Globes was just her way of starting to lay down the groundwork and the foundation.
She loves gardening too much to do that.
Well, here's an interesting point of view. Like, why would, I think Dave Rubin said this, why would Oprah give up being queen of the universe to demote herself to being president of the United States? You know, her influence and her ability to control her destiny are complete in the position she's in now. If she runs for president, she's going to have to get her hands dirty. She's, look at how great Trump's life was before he was president. He may be servicing his ego big time here, but he has to wake up every day and be accountable to people. He has to do things he doesn't want to do. He has to meet with world leaders. These are not necessarily things that happy-go-lucky Oprah wants to do, especially in her twilight. She knows she gave up her daily show on television because it was a lot of work. And she started the O Network, which she made her own empire with. It's done very well. But now she does what she wants to do. Isn't that the position we all want to be in?
Exactly. But we'll see a big trend with all these big celebs. They're all going to flirt with presidency because people like to talk about it. They're not actually going to commit to it.
And
but
I'm afraid Trump's opened that door, so every celebrity is going to imagine they
Well, America, I was thinking about this yesterday. America opened that door. American voters are the ones who set the standard for who thinks that they could potentially run for president in that country. They're the ones who set that standard.
Maybe they started it with Ronald Reagan back in the 80s. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger and, you know.
Well, Oprah's
and even
now,
Senator, what's the
not Arnold?
Franken. Senator L. Franken. He was a comedian. He was on Saturday Night Live.
And also that cheerleader, George W. Bush.
That's right. Even him. All right. So here's some other news that you need to know. Let's take the Oprah story as number one. Number two, do you know that it snowed in the Sahara?
What?
The Sahara Desert.
The Sahara Desert, and there's some breathtaking pictures of that. Wow.
Y'all, global warming.
I know. So, on Sunday, snow fell in one of the most unlikely places on Earth, in Algeria, in the Sahara Desert. They got a couple of inches of white snow. It clung to the dunes for an hour and a half before melting. The Atlas Mountains saw snow that will stick around a little bit longer, according to a local photographer who captured the scenes. But there we go. Snow in the most unlikely places. Fascinating story. There's a smart watch they've invented that will run off your body heat. Will not need batteries. Will not need kinetic energy. It'll use your body heat. How's that?
Well, that's just smart.
Yep. Pretty damn smart. Who doesn't want that, right? Now, if we can get our phones to recharge on our body heat, then we'll be talking.
What if phones recharge on our loneliness? That'd be a good one, too. That'd be kids with full battery.
If you could charge something on loneliness, there'd be a lot of applications. Zimbabwe's main opposition leader on Monday dropped the biggest hint yet that he could step down from his party, setting the stage for an election scenario not witnessed since 2002. Morgan Tsvangirai, I don't know if you saw him on TV, but he's looking weak. He was been battling colon cancer. And he is a popular figure, but he doesn't look like he wants to run for another round. He says, I'm looking at the imminent prospects of us as the older generation leaving the levers of leadership to allow the younger generation to take forward this huge task. So we'd welcome that on a number of levels, wouldn't we? I reckon we would. I think that could be quite interesting. And not only because we need younger leaders in general in the world. If you think about like 70 and 80-year-olds running places where the population is completely skewed to the younger demographic. You want people who represent you running things. There's obviously experience and wisdom that comes with age, but there's also a lack of energy and a complacency and a being stuck in your ways that we need to get past. People can't get over Hugh Jackman's shocked face after his Golden Globes loss. Everybody's talking about his facial expression when he didn't win, and they're saying, oh, he clearly is a bad loser. But then people will do this.
People will do that. Mm.
Patricia DeLille's fighting back. She says she's going to sue the pants off of the people who accused her of using Cape Town city money to refurbish and upgrade her house. And she was very strident yesterday. I kind of felt maybe it's just because there's some element of Patricia DeLille that's, it speaks to me of honesty. I don't know much about the people who've been saying she's guilty of using public money for her own purposes, but there's something about her attitude to all of this. She's finally spoken out. She's been gagged for a long time. She wasn't able to speak about this, and she decided yesterday that this was the day. She's going to go after the people who accused her of using this money in a nefarious way. Good for her, right? I couldn't help feeling like I'm on her side. Hmm. What's wrong with the DA at the moment? What's going on there?
What's wrong with all of them?
Yeah, that's true.
They all have different problems to deal with.
That's absolutely true. And maybe one last thing. Former First Lady of Zimbabwe, Grace Mugabe, obtained her 2014 doctorate in just a few months, but her dissertation has never been published. So Zimbabwean anti-corruption investigators are probing whether or not she fraudulently obtained a degree that she apparently received within months. So there's something else to look at. She might not only be dangerous with a extension cord, but she might also not be as smart as she says she is. That's all, well, a fair rough summary of some of the things that you need to know today. There'll be more with Mubs at 7 o'clock. Don't forget, also this morning, a couple of interesting things happening. Nick Wolpe will be coming in. He is the guy who runs Lily's Leaf. And, of course, the ANC had its birthday yesterday. You know, they turned 106.
Mm.
So Lily's Leaf, an important historical site in South Africa, the site of where Mandela buried his gun, of where the Rivonia trialists were arrested. So it's just down the road from our studios here, and many of us have been there. Some of us have not, and we thought we'd get Nick in. He and I bumped into each other at the airport a while ago, and I thought, he's one of those people we need to talk about and talk to. Also, Run will be popping in a little later on. Run Noiner, who will tell us about the latest in cryptocurrencies. And we're going to be launching a daily update for people who can't get enough. People like Ben, people like me, want to check on Ethereum and Bitcoin and Ripple and Monero and all the new currencies that are entering the crypto market. So we'll find out what Run's up to. He'll be popping in just before 8 o'clock this morning. So we'll talk to him too. Plenty to get through. Let's turn our attentions now to Ben and
but
see what's going on.
Speaking of the cryptocurrency.
Oh, you want to give the... Are you going to give us the update?
Oh, no. I was just going to
say.
I was queuing.
All right. Okay. Let me give you the numbers.
Thank you.
So here are, on balance, the price of Bitcoin this morning in dollars, $15,227.01. $15,227. The cost of one Ether... That's the Ethereum currency. One Ether will cost you $1,197. And since we mentioned Ripple, let's give that one as well because a lot of people care about it. And it has been up and down quite a lot in the last little while. Ripple trading at $2.374.
It was three something yesterday.
Yeah, it's dropped significantly.
Volatile.
Very volatile.
Ethereum's the real winner right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's growing and growing and growing. Okay, let's turn our attention to Ben. If your hair is thinning, your stomach's widening.
Okay. I had a bad December.
It happens to the best of us, Ben.
Personal.
It's part of being an adult, but nothing will make you forget about your flaws quite like the flawless new Range Rover Velar from Menlyn Land Rover. True first of its kind, the Range Rover Velar combines elegant design, sophisticated technology, a luxurious interior, and distinctive Range Rover all-road performance. It's simply everything you could desire from a modern vehicle. Be one of the first to experience the car that will take you anywhere and everywhere with consummate ease by visiting menlyn.landrover.co.za or give them a call on Pretoria 369-2400 to arrange a test drive. Better yet, you can go down to the dealership, the new improved Land Rover Menlyn. It's located at 221 Grasfontein Road, just off the N1 highway in Menlyn. Ben's here. He's got some sport for us. Strap yourself in. Let's get into it.
Well, an absolutely enthralling day of Test cricket yesterday at Newlands. I did bugger all work because I just couldn't help but watch every single ball of the action. The Proteas resumed with just 2 wickets down on day 4, and well, the pitch was a bit sweaty under the covers, and straight away Hashim Amla edged one to the slips, and well, it was just 1 wicket. But no, 1 wicket became 2, 3, 4, and the batsman had no idea. The Test switch was very much a bowler's kind of test. The seamers right from the beginning when the SA team was 12 for 3. They were just stamping their sort of mark on the whole test. And it kind of, theory was that as long as the sun comes out and bakes the pitch, it'll become easier and easier to bat on. The Proteas, kind of conscious of this, try to stick around, but only Avi de Villiers kind of had the measure of the bowling. He scored, I think, 35. The rest, well, they were just nowhere. Dale Steyn with one leg came out to bat just so that they could try to get some runs because it was going to become so crucial.
They made him come out with one leg.
Well, Dale Steyn's out of the rest of the series now with his bruised heel.
So they still brought him on.
Just another setback. Yeah, he limped out there. He hobbled out there. He stood and he faced a few balls while AB tried to swing a few sixes. So 130 all out. So out of nowhere, Virat Kohli and his merry men were cheering and shouting and going cock-a-hoop, as they say in the classics.
Oh, that's a nice thing. I haven't heard that since my great-great-great-grandfather died, Ben.
They were cock-a-hoofing all over the Newlands pitch because they needed 208 runs and they had literally five sessions to do it in. And that just sounds pretty simple, right? Well, not really. That test was always going to be for the bowlers. So, as Faf du Plessis said, he was a bit nervous, actually. He was, well, in real words, he was shitting himself because suddenly the Proteas wanted 350 to defend. They had 208. That's not a lot of runs. And India is the world's best test cricket team, according to the ICC. That's all I'll say about that. And Werner Philander, he is just unstoppable at Newlands. I mean, he really is. That is just his ground. It's his patch. You do not mess with the Vern. He had the most aware bowling figures of 6 for 42. And with no stain, Vern just stepped up 6 wickets. That's his absolute career best, 6 for 42. Unstoppable was Big Vern. Volkal was good. Rabada was good. Maharaj wasn't really his test. He dropped an absolute sitter in the outfield. And, well, the pitch was never really for his liking. So that was it. India, 135 all out. Kohli got bugger all again. And with that, 1-0 go the Proteas. So you've got to ask the question. Yesterday, I wrote this parody piece about the ICC rating the test pitch, the pitch being poor. Mm-hmm. Obviously, people don't read anything in this day and age. So they just saw the tweet and got outraged. But is it kind of unfair that when SA goes to India, you get these spinning dust bowls that open with bowlers that only bowl spin, and they don't know what they're doing? Those Indians as well yesterday, it didn't look like they knew what they were really doing. So, is it unfair? Is it unfair to have a seeming track? What's the purest form of cricket? Is it spin? Is it pace? This debate will go on forever and ever, but I tell you what, it'll heighten as it goes now to Centurion. On Saturday, second test, SA versus India, that's where it starts. Centurion, as I keep saying to you, is the best place to watch cricket if you want that sort of village green kind of atmosphere. You can go there, you can take your camper chair, you'll smell Boerewors all day, not one for the vegans, and you can get beer whenever you want. It's a great day out. And if you book ahead, you might be able to get to Castle Corner, where there's a pool that people don't normally pee in. So, I mean, it's just such a cricket
sounds
experience.
Wonderful.
Saturday, all the way through to, I don't know when Test match is going to finish. But India are going to be jumping around the popping crease again because it's going to be hard, fast. Lungi and Ngidi has been brought in for Dale Steyn, as is Dwayne Ullafia. Which of those will crack the nod? Interesting to see, because I think Otis Gibson is quite set on this whole five bowlers thing. 4 express seamers and Maharaj to kind of pick up the pieces if needed. It is a great side, but the question then becomes, is it more pressure now in the batting lineup because Elgar's form looks a bit shaky? Umla might be going through one of his dips. And if that happens, then you've only got, well, you've only got 4 frontline batsmen. Only 6 batsmen if you include de Kock as the frontliner. Anyway, Test cricket's the best thing in all of sport. And yesterday just showed that again. Andy Murray, well, he's screwed. He had a hip injury that's been dogging him for the last 18 months. He had another operation.
Such great pleasure in delivering bad news about poor Andy Murray.
Not at all. I was purely providing the sort of severity of his injury by saying he's screwed. So he had a hip injury. He was in Australia, obviously trying to get to the Aussie Open. But no, his hip says, I'm not in the mood. Hip injury now means he'll be out completely between 6 to 8 weeks. And just imagine that he's bedridden. His mother will be coming up to him, prodding him, going, "Does that hurt? Does that hurt? Get back in the court."
Oh.
So he is hoping that the summer series around the grass court season is when he'll be able to be back. I mean, that's a big deal. Andy, I mean, he's no spring chicken. He's 30. So his best years might be behind him, but he vows to come back and be strong. It's a huge week in golf. Obviously, it's the SA Open at Glendower. So today will be the Pro-Am, where really rich and important people will play with the pros. And then Wednesday will be a practice day. Looks to be a bit of rain about, but then Thursday proper, the action starts. And it'll be a great SA field all the way through. All the big SA players are there. Last year, there was a bit of bad blood, thinking that, say, like Charles Watzel, Brennan Grace, and Lucas Hazen kind of snubbed the tournament. Grace was playing in Hawaii because he was an ex-tournament winner on the PGA Tour. But this time around, all the SA boys are there, so you can see them all in Glendower. Not a great sort of European showing. That's because the Eurasia Cup is on the go. Now, the Eurasia Cup is essentially when Europe takes on Asia. Now, we all know the Ryder Cup is the big team thing. That's when America takes on Europe. The President's Cup is when America takes on the rest of the world. Well, the Eurasia is the chance for the Asians to come through and play the team format. So all your big European stars will be at the Eurasia Cup. So Cabrera Bayo, Casey, Dunn, Fisher, Fitzpatrick, Fleetwood, Hatton, Levy, Norrin, Peters, Stenson, and Wiesberger. They'll all be there. They won't be at Glendower. It's not a spoiler. I'll tell you up front. In other golfing news, a guy called Brad Fritz has... Okay.
Brad F.
Basically bust himself for a doping ban on the PGA Tour.
With a name like that?
He says, "Look, guys, I'm really sorry, but I took a banned substance." And they're like, "Okay, Brad, just take a 3-month ban." Like, golf's such a great game. And only golf can guys actually bust themselves for doping or failing doping tests. But you also got to think, I mean, really? He took a banned substance because he was trying to lose weight. But I don't know if this is this even a story? Like, you can't dope to become better at golf, because if you get muscles and all that kind of stuff, you might compromise your short game. Okay. If you take dope to calm yourself down, well, then you might have anxiety and paranoia by the 7th hole if you were great in the first. So drug doping in golf, I just find this such an interesting thing. I'm not saying you should allow it, but I mean, it's just this guy.
I don't know, Ben. Could your love for this game be interfering, making you a little bit biased?
No, not really. I can understand if you're trying to get into shape and you dope the hell out of it and then suddenly you like got a six pack. Maybe that was Brad's intention. He really wants to lose a bit of weight and, you know, become more durable as the season goes. I don't know. But anyway, he's honest, so good for him. And that's pretty much it for the sport. There's a bit of football knocking around in the week, but it's not that important. I mean, I'm trying to get into the ABSA Premiership again, but Ajax are hosting Sundowns tonight, 7:30. If you're into that, that's it. That's your sport today.
Thank you, Ben. Let me remind you that the Renegade Report releases a brand new episode today, and it's one that they've been very excited to put out there. It's Jordan Peterson versus David Benatar, two of the major intellectual giants struggling over something called antinatalism. Do you know what this is? Do you remember I spoke about it last year? And it's finally ready to go. We're going to press the button on that one today, and I encourage you, if you're interested in philosophy, to take a listen to this. As usual, it has Ramon and Jonathan up against each other on who was the better exemplar of their position. David Benatar says that humans should go extinct. Existing is our biggest problem.
I remember
we should not have children, according to him. And the opposite position taken up by Jordan Peterson, a Canadian intellectual. Jordan Peterson, who's been on the Renegade Report before, and he says, no, that's immoral, that negates the whole purpose of our being, and the two of them have a proper, serious, philosophical and intellectual discussion around our role on the earth, and whether or not we should exist in the first place, and whether bringing a person into existence is an immoral thing to do. So listen to that. Particularly if you're one of those people who's struggling with the idea of whether or not you want to have kids. I know that this was a debate we were never allowed to have, particularly women were never allowed to have in the past. They just had to have children if the man wanted children. Maybe you don't. Maybe you want to have some ammo the next time you get into that discussion with someone. Take a listen to that show.
I spoke to a woman over the holidays who was telling me, and she's a mother of a teenage girl, and she was telling me that if she could go back and do it again, she would not have that child.
That's an honest parent.
There must be so many parents walking around who feel like that today.
None of them say
but
it.
None of them are allowed to say it publicly.
Well, it's considered like psychopathic antisocial behavior, right? So let's go from that, which I'll be listening to for sure, to Said by Sia, which takes place every morning around about this time. Little dose of inspiration and positivity for you. What do you got for us?
And setting your mind off in the right way.
You want a theme song for this morning?
Okay, let's see what you have up your sleeve this morning.
I'm not going to use Ben's theme song. Hang on, let me just kill
no,
that.
No, I don't think that'll work.
No, he gets jealous. Here it is. All right, see ya. Take it away.
Actually, funnily enough, it does have to do with something I'm talking about today. So if you want to get all about working, I read an interesting article on psychology today from a therapist who talks about the 4 morning success rituals to start your day off right. So while we get that working and let's be productive, this is what a psychologist who has written the likes of From Anxiety to Zen. Listen to that. This is what she recommend. So number one is to set your intentions for the day. So it's one thing to want to feel more calm and prepared for the day, and another to actually execute your plan, she says. So she suggests to start the night before, thereby ensuring adequate rest. So yes, this whole sleep thing is actually not overrated, so something we should be factoring in. Second thing she suggests to, as part of the 4 morning success rituals to start your day off right, she says, Linda says, we should think proactive versus reactive. So if you spend the first 10 minutes of each day, for example, checking and answering email, you're priming your mind for a reactive state. Rather than go on the defense each morning, take that time back and reframe it to what she terms me time. So when you see yourself as having an internal locus of control, you're less likely to reinforce anxious patterns of thinking. So here are some options that you can do. For example, read a self-help book, or just take some time to actually think about the day, or just actually frame your mind to have positive thoughts. The third thing she recommends is to plan and plan and plan. Start each morning with a bit of a mini planning session, because our minds are and body are fresh. Take advantage of your clean slate. So resist the urge to replay yesterday's soundtrack or getting sucked into worries, but rather focus and plan on the day ahead. And then lastly, she says, own your first 120 minutes. This is actually very interesting. I didn't realize this, but she actually says that your first about 2 hours are the most productive you will be in the day.
Oh, no.
Why do you think we do this show? Why do you think we do this show?
Because just said, oh, no.
No, I mean, that's all we get is 2 hours, and then what? And then your brain is just the most productive
you'll be in the day.
Jeez,
so it actually makes sense. She says, don't cloud your first 2 hours with useless things, or, you know, don't cram things that you aren't exactly a main priority, but rather turn off notifications on your phone, close all of those useless tabs on your computer, and the first 2 hours be intentional with how you spend them. So factoring those 4 things, Linda says these are the 4 morning success rituals to start your day off right.
Thank you, Sia. There we go. Said by Sia. And speaking of Sia, Mash just sent me a message now to say, hey, I just want to know from Sia, what is his theme for 2018? Is it maybe the year of no?
No. Everyone was suggesting that. No. I'm just dubbing 2018 the year to vibrate higher.
Ooh.
I know, it just sounds so fancy, doesn't it?
Yeah, but what does it mean?
In normal people's term, not Oprah-speaking people.
Yes.
You just call it like to intensify everything. I think I want to intensify my experiences, how I spend my time, what I do. Just make the most of every moment. Vibrate higher.
Okay.
And also not get into nonsense.
There we go.
Yeah.
Probably good for all of us.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting point. Someone anonymous says on the WhatsApp line, and by the way, you can always WhatsApp us on 079-748-2090. They read a tweet that said, people who want Oprah to be president don't realize that they want Oprah to authorize drone strikes. Think about that one. And hey guys, love having you back. Thank you very much. I also got a nice email here from Robin, which we may have time for a little bit later on. Just about some of the shows and caught up on podcasts and blah, blah, blah. We'll get to that later on. We also got Nicholas Wolpe coming in a little bit later and Run Noiner and lots of news with Mubs. All of that on the way. Plus, who knows? Maybe there'll be time for a little interview with Jay something about his new book, Something's Cooking. You want to hear it?
Mm-hmm.
It's coming up a little bit later this morning. Let's go. Let's start the day, shall we? Are you ready?
Always.
This is CliffCentral.com.